Welcome to the Mountain Grapevine program on WART Community Radio for Madison County, North Carolina. My name is Chuck Blethyn, your host for today's program. The Mountain Grapevine reports on all things grape and wine in the mountains of western North Carolina, and sometimes elsewhere. My programs will have interviews with movers and shakers in the viticulture and wine industries, as well as some educational sessions on wine etiquette, wine evaluation, and special value-added products that can be made from grapes. We have on the phone today Mike White, the Iowa State University Extension and Outreach Viticultural Specialist out in Indianola, Iowa. And for those of you who don't know, it's just south of Des Moines, Iowa. Mike, welcome to the Mountain Grapevine Radio Show.
Glad to be here, and I look forward to a conversation.
Well, Mike, one of the things that we've had some conversation about in the past through some emails and telephone conversations is the fact that you were out there in Iowa during the time when the viticulture industry was just getting started. And here in the mountains of western North Carolina, we're just in the very budding stages of developing our business. We've got a number of our very first commercial-sized vineyards planted, and we're just trying to figure out what happens next and how that whole industry develops. So if you could sort of tell us a story about how it worked out there, that might give us a clue on what we can start to be looking for out here.
Well, yeah, I sure will. Well, I've been working for Iowa State University as an extension specialist for 25 years now, and I was a crop specialist, corn, soybeans, forages, and that. And in 2000, here in Iowa, we had a number of fruit wineries, just a handful that were making some fruit wines for tourist locations and that. And then we had two wineries that had started up. They were growing grapes in the state, and one of them was close to where I live, and they came to me in 2000 and asked if Iowa State could help them put on some grape grower meetings because they needed grapes. So I agreed to do it, and we'd bring in speakers from other states that had been in the wine business for a while. A lot of people from southern Illinois, Missouri came up and helped us out. But we put on monthly meetings for about three years. And a typical meeting, 75 to 125 people would show up, and I knew it was going to go because the people interested were doctors, lawyers, real estate, IT. Many of them were moneyed people. Many of them had backgrounds in wine. Many of them may have came from California or maybe the East Coast. So that's how it all started, and in 2000 we had two wineries with grapes, growing grapes, and today here in Iowa we have 105 wineries in the state of Iowa, and about 270 vineyards covering 1,200 acres.
Okay, so it sounds like you had your start out there in a similar fashion of what the growth has been out here. When we first came here 9 years ago, we had 60 licensed wineries in the state of North Carolina, and now there's 216. We got about roughly 480 commercial vineyards covering about 2,400 acres. So most of that development has been out east, and of course we're out here in the mountains, and that's part of our problem. What were some of the first things that came across when you started working with these people? What kind of questions were they asking, and what kind of things did you have to figure out?
I always tell people from about 2000 to 2005, it was kind of like the blind leading the blind. We had a lot of entrepreneurs and a lot of people in it. We were having a good time, very good time. But we really didn't know, what we were doing for the most part. We were gradually learning. A lot of vineyards were put in the wrong place. The wrong varieties got put in. Some of our initial wines, I sometimes tell people that back in the early days, if you wanted to go out and visit wineries, I would suggest you get a tetanus shot ahead of time. Because our wine quality wasn't very good.
Oh,
it was a growing. It was a lot of growing.
Oh, geez. Okay.
I mean, you take a hobby winemaker, and all of a sudden you're going from a 5-gallon carboy, and now you give them a 100 or 200 or 300-gallon tank. All kinds of things can go wrong. So we had some problems, and gradually we brought in Iowa State, got involved, Iowa State University. We had Des Moines Area Community College got involved, putting some classes on. One of the big helps we had was the VESTA program out of Springfield, Missouri. That's the Viticulture, Enology, Science, and Technology Alliance. And I think they have a little over 20 states now that you can go online and get get a 2-year degree in viticulture, grape growing, 2-year degree in winemaking, or a 2-year degree in the business of wine. And these things grew as we grew, and we tapped into them. And finally, you know, today here in Iowa, you walk in our wineries, and, you know, we're winning first place prizes, you know, gold medals, double gold, best of show, international competitions all across the United States. We even have one winery in Iowa that has won gold medals in France for their sparkling wine.
Wow, that's some progress, I would say, since 2000. That's 16, 17 years in the making. That's very good.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a fun ride, and we're actually, in some cases, going on right now. Many of the people got into this 50, 60 years old. They acquired some money. They're going into a second lifestyle, have a little business, and, you know, it's now they're in their late 60s, 70s. Now we have the second generation coming into these wineries. And as with any maturing industry, the second generation, those are the bean counters. Those are the accountants and the lawyers and the professional winemakers and tasting room help. So the industry is changing dramatically from what it used to be.
Now, so you offer all the support now out of Iowa State University for the new wineries that are up and coming?
Yes, and that's one key for any industry up and coming is that we organized the Iowa Wine Growers Association in 2000, and that's been fantastic because they lobbied hard, they went to our capital, and out here in Iowa, we really have no big cities that dominate any part of Iowa. We have 99 counties and every representative from each county and senator covering two counties. They all have about the same power. So it's locally, pretty well everything is locally run out here. And our winery association, working with the legislature here in Iowa, was able to get some very favorable laws to help our industry grow.
Do you remember some of the initial problems you had when you were getting started out there?
We didn't know how to grow grapes, so we put them in the wrong places. But that came with time. And, you know, unfortunately, it takes $8,000 to $10,000 minimum for the acre of grapes in out here. And you don't even get a crop till your third year or so. And so we had some pretty expensive mistakes going on. And we were able to solve those. I think on the grape growing side, we know how to do that fairly well. The winemaking side, we're still growing in. And what really helped us is that we were able to get the legislature to transfer some funds from our alcohol beverage division that they tax all the alcohol and wine and beer in the state. And we asked for some of the excise taxes to help educate, market, just to help our industry grow. Iowa has the third highest excise tax on wine in the nation at $1.75 a gallon. And the excise tax on Iowa wines goes to the Midwest Grape and Wine Institute at Iowa State University, and then that's used for education, research, and marketing. And that's helped fantastic. We started that in 2006. We brought in a Dr. Merle DeMonticari from Missouri. He was known as the godfather of the Missouri wine industry. He was down there 21 years. So when Merle came up to our Midwest Grape Wine Institute and helped us out in 2006, that changed everything because now we have a professional winemaker, PhD, and we started doing some really intensive training, and that's key. The whole industry relies on good wine. If you don't get to that step where you have good wine being made, you're not going to get very far.
When you started taking a look at how the wineries solve their problems, what were some of the individual problems that you saw them solving on their own without coming through the university gates?
Working through the association, they were very active. They were doing their own lobbying. The wineries with the association, they were doing their own lobbying with the legislature to get things done. As the Iowa Wine Growers Association. And then what we did is our legislature, you know, pretty well meets from January 1 through mid-May or so, depending on what the conflict is or what they're, sometimes they'll argue until June. But normally that first 4 or 5 months is when our legislature is meeting. And what they would do, the Iowa Wine Growers Association, they would go in our capital city of Des Moines and go up by the capital, and they may rent a floor of a restaurant or go into a pizza place, and they would just, once a week during the legislative session, they would have pizza Wednesdays, and they would just an open invitation to any legislature. And then the legislators would come in. They didn't have to talk about wine. They didn't have to talk about grapes. It was just some place they could come in, drink a glass of wine for free, have some pizza for free, and if they wanted to talk about wine, fine. And that helped us a lot to develop some things with our legislature. And here's the key about the wine industry in the Midwest, and this is really key, or in North Carolina, especially in your situation. As I tell people, it's not the wine. It's not all about wine. There's so many things involved, and our legislators understood this after we told them. But we've done two economic studies here in Iowa. One was in 2008, and one was in 2012. And in both cases, I'll tell you, there was, for every dollar's worth of Iowa wine sold, there was a $32 impact in 2008. Then we did this study again, an independent company out of California, and then we found out in 2012 that for every every $1 in Iowa wine sales, there was a $28 economic impact. And you got to ask yourself, how can that be? Somebody's pushing the numbers. Well, it comes down to this, is that good wine is the seed. Our wine industry here in the Midwest is all about lodging, gas, food, weddings, events, event centers. It's tourism. That's what it's all about. And so there's so much else involved. Well, the legislature loves that. That's pretty well a clean industry that is taxable. And by them helping our industry out, it just helps their coffers, and it helps with the overall economy of the state of Iowa. So they've always been our friends.
Well, that sounds very interesting, Mike. I appreciate you sharing that with us. We're going to take a break right now, folks, so hang on. We'll be right back.
Today's program is being brought to you by Hermes Hiking Pole Pedometer. Hermie Halverson lives in Hot Springs, about 14 miles west of Marshall, North Carolina. His cabin is a few yards off the Appalachian Trail. Over the years, he has seen hundreds of hikers passing by his place. He has also met a few now and then in his favorite watering hole in downtown Hot Springs. Their biggest complaint was they can't accurately gauge how far they've hiked along the trail. Most of them wear a pedometer that tells them how many steps they've taken, but it doesn't tell them how far they have walked in any particular hiking trip. Hermie works in the Walmart in Weaverville and was a greeter, and he uses a handheld counter to keep track of how many people enter and leave the store. One day, he had the bright idea about making a hiking stick he could sell to all of the hikers along the Appalachian Trail. He bought a hand counter and took it home to his workshop out behind his outhouse. There he disassembled the old wind-up clock he found at the recycle center. He made a special slip disc so it would only punch his handheld counter once when it had been ratcheted 2,000 times. He had calculated that the average person steps about 32 inches to the handheld counter indicated 1 and was activated 2,000 times, or exactly 1 mile. He hollowed out a hiking pole and placed a spring-loaded shaft through a hole in the bottom of the hiking stick. Every time the pole hit the ground, it would increment 1 notch until it was activated 2,000 times, and the hand counter mounted on top of the pole would show 1 mile. He began demonstrating his hiking pole pedometer to hikers, and they loved it. Before long, everyone was using Hermie's hiking pole pedometer. Hermie had to hire a few part-time workers to keep up with the business. Hermie adds a note of caution. If you use your hiking pole pedometer for poking at snakes and spiders, it won't give you an accurate distance on your hike. Hermie's hiking pole pedometer is another special product made in the good old U.S. of A. here in Madison County, North Carolina. You can buy Hermie's hiking pole pedometer at Hermie's Hiking Lodge just off the Appalachian Trail, or at Zuma's Cafe in downtown Marshall for only $1.298. And now back to our regular program.
Welcome back, folks. We've been talking with Mike White, who works out at Iowa State University as the Extension and Outreach Viticulture Specialist. out in Indianola, Iowa. Mike's been informing us about a lot of interesting things that went on in developing their industry out there. I just wanted to circle back, Mike, and cover this other special pizza night thing that you mentioned as a way of getting the attention of some of the folks over to legislature. Sort of expand on that just a touch, if you will.
Here's the deal, is that our legislature, they meet from January 1 through mid-May normally, and it's that February, March is when they're forming the bills and passing them through the funnel to where they'll go to the different committees, and so it's very important to be able to speak to them. And one way we found out that was a cheap way to do this was we had pizza nights on Wednesday nights, and it got to be a tradition. So any legislator or their wife or even a lobbyist, we didn't care who they brought, they may not want to talk about wine. But we had free pizza, free wine. They could come into a setting where there's no pressure. But normally, eventually, the conversation all often came about the wine industry in Iowa, and we were able to deliver our message of tourism and economic development. So that helped us dramatically become friends with our legislators and get some things done to help our industry.
Talk to us a little bit about the viticulture infrastructure organization there, how that came about, and some of the challenges and some of the things you did right in working through that.
With any new industry, a lot of people get in, they don't know what they're doing. They may not have the financial background or the means to get it done, but they have enough to get started. And essentially, that's kind of what happened here. We had a lot of small vineyards go in. Up through about 2010, we got up to about 425 vineyards, average acre about four, average size about 3 acres at that time. And then since about 2010, we've been losing vineyards. But the acreage is remaining the same, and what we're finding out is that people are tired of doing all that hand work out in the vineyards. They're getting old enough now, they're moving into retirement, so we're losing vineyards. So essentially, we had to build infrastructure to go forward. And some of the infrastructure we're looking at is you have to spend money on tractors and sprayers, equipment for maybe hedging the vineyard. We now have 8 grape harvesters in the state of Iowa, and that helps dramatically because it takes anywhere from 75 to maybe 100 hours to pick an acre of grapes out here in Iowa. Well, I can get a grape harvester, buy a used one for maybe $25,000, $30,000, and I can pull into a vineyard and harvest an acre of grapes in about an hour to an hour and a half. So that's, you know, mechanization of the vineyard has been critical for our growth because the labor, we can't even find the labor, number one. Most of our people in this industry are in their 50s plus. So that's what we've jumped up. Now we're kind of moving into the mechanization here of our vineyards. Another thing that is cold storage. Anybody that has a vineyard, I highly recommend they get cold storage. And here's one simple example. Instead of having 20 people come over Friday night or Saturday morning to pick grapes, you know, and then deliver them to the winery, you can have a cold storage unit out there and have 3 or 4 people pick them during the week and put them in cold storage and then deliver them when the winery wants them. That alone is huge. It's helped us dramatically. On the wine side, you know, to go out and buy a really nice press, some of the equipment we need to process the grapes, it's pretty tough, and that's grown over time. Well, our wineries are able to pass, we can sell Iowa wine back and forth, bulk different wines. So then, if you cannot afford a crusher, destemmer, or a big press, then what you can do, you can buy juice or wine from other wineries in the state. Over time, though, then the wineries get big enough, and then they can buy this equipment. So there's a lot of infrastructure involved, and just delivery. A lot of these people were just acreages out here that were planting grapes. They didn't even have a pickup to deliver the grapes. Well, now we're growing, and we got big pickups, so we got delivery trucks, and some of them were refrigerated. it's just step by step as the industry grows, you get more mechanization, you get more equipment, and I think this is key. You realize that you can't really make money with a small vineyard. You can't. If you're going to have a vineyard only, I tell people anymore out here in Iowa, to pay for the equipment and everything, you probably need at least 10 acres to make it work.
10 acres, okay. Well, we found out here in the mountains, we're probably going to have to be somewhere between 10 to 20 acres here to do it just on the grapes alone. But we find that if we look at doing some value-added stuff or working closely with a couple of the local companies who can do the value-added, there's more potential in looking at some of our specialty markets.
I agree with that. We've got a couple co-ops out here. We have, we have an Aronia Berry co-op. They are doing processing together, and they are also they're buying a harvester and sharing some of the equipment. That can be done. Yeah, that can be a co-op, that can be an LLC, but the main point is this, is that in any industry, value-added agriculture, you have to move beyond the barn or that room down in the basement or having a garage business. Eventually, you're going to have to put capital into expensive equipment, equipment to haul things, harvest things to make the industry grow.
As I see it, at least, our biggest asset here in the mountains are the farmers. Most of them own the land outright, have for generations. They understand hard work. They've got a lot of machinery and equipment they can use on some of the mountains here. So we're trying to start to fill in the corners here and there on this infrastructure thing. So what you've just told us has been very, very helpful. Thank you for that.
Another thing about your industry out there, the wine industry and tourism it's just huge. They go hand in hand. There was a study done, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago or so. It was out in California, and Disneyland had the most tourists of any thing out there in California. And the second thing that had the most tourism was the wine industry and wine tourism. Okay, so it's huge, and I would think that there's quite a few winos out there would love to come up into your mountains and visit wineries. That would be one heck of a place to go, a destination-type tourism going on.
Well, we've already kicked that part of it off last year for the first time. We got together with a bus company that provides tours down here in Buncombe County, and we now have a number of our mountain wineries on special little wine tours. And we did that on our own as the French Broad Vignerons, which is our local trade association. Part of the research that came out of our facility down in Raleigh in the past years is we found out that we're creating now about $1.4 billion worth of economic value through the viticulture industry here. The other thing that came out of the study was that people who come into Asheville are very willing to come out into the mountains and visit wineries and commercial vineyards and that kind of thing, but not just for one. And they won't do it for two. But if you can put together three for a little wine trail, they will be willing to do that. And, of course, the motels and restaurants and the rafting and all the other stuff that we got going in the mountains here has been benefiting from that. So we're trying very hard to get all the little wineries and vineyards connected somehow to another one. But we're so sparsely populated here, it's still quite a drive between vineyards and wineries typically.
Another thing that as our industry grew, we've seen the value of wine trails, and we now have 8 wine trails in the state of Iowa. And essentially, that's nothing but a limited liability corporation where once a month or once a quarter, they'll kind of have some kind of event to get people out and visit the wineries, and you get a free glass or something. But that's huge. That's huge. And then the next step is then we have these appellations of origin, or they're called American viticultural appellations. They started back in about 1982, the first one ever. And we wanted to mimic Europe and France, where they had these appellations where special grapes are growing and wines being made. So in 1982, the federal government allowed entities to get together and form these appellations. And the first one was in the Herman area in Missouri. And now we're up, I think I just checked last week, we were like 239 of these. And we now have two in Iowa. We have the Upper Mississippi that covers Minnesota, Illinois, Wisconsin, and parts of Iowa. And then we have the Lush Hills District on the western side of Iowa. What this does for the local wineries then is that then they can sell an estate wine, meaning 100% of the grapes from their vineyard. And it's kind of a marketing ploy. That's why we want these things, these appellations. And typically, you can put another $2 on the bottle of wine, and it helps out, you know, in making a little bit more money at these wines.
We've had the AVAs come on strong here within the last couple of years. When we first moved here, I think 2 years ago, we had two. Now we're up to six.
Do you have one in the mountains there?
Yes and no. We've got one that's in the far southern area of the Appalachian area where we live that rolls over into part of Georgia. And we've got one on the north side that has a couple counties of Virginia and a couple counties of Tennessee included with a county or two of North Carolina. So where we are right here, we don't have one yet. I know from some of the local wineries that we're in the process of trying to get that formed.
Tax and Trade Bureau that handles all the licensing of wineries, distilleries, breweries, they're the ones in charge of this. And it's about a 50-page document or so. You have to cite the soils, the history, the cultural. You got to make it, why is that area different? Why should we call it American Viticultural Area or Appalachian? It takes a couple years to get it approved. But once it's approved, it really does help out because you can put estate wine on your label. A lot of people that are not in the wine jargon don't understand this, but winos understand what an estate wine is and what appellations are, and it will bring people from farther distances to visit your wine.
Well, I think that's what we've been finding out from the ones where we've been staying in close contact with them. So we're anxious to see how these local ones are going to work out for us here in the mountains.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, Mike, I really appreciate your taking time with us today to share some of your experience and thoughts on how the viticulture industry got started there in Iowa. Certainly, our listeners will be able to draw a lot of parallels between what's going on there and what's going on here. And you've certainly given us good tips. Again, we appreciate the amount of time that you've taken with us on the radio today. So thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
Good luck out there. You know, I always tell people that nobody gets in the grape and wine industry to have a bad time. You know, yeah, we want to make money. We understand that, but we're not in it to have a bad time. And it's fantastic people to work with, and I just hope your industry grows out there.
Well, folks, we've been talking today on the phone with Mike White. He's from Iowa State University. He's the Extension and Outreach Viticulture Specialist for the university there out in Indianola, Iowa. Mike, again, thank you so much, and call that a wrap for today's program.
This is the Mountain Grapevine on WART Community Radio from Addison County, North Carolina. If you have a friend whom you think might enjoy my program, tell them my Thursday programs will be rebroadcast on Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Chuck Blethyn signing off for today. Cheers!